Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Well, thank you, Jackie, for that wonderful introduction. We'll be on the lookout for you in the years to come. Eli, thank you, and to all the Move On members that are out there for the outstanding work that all of you do each and every day. Some of you may know that I got started not running for office, but as a community organizer. And it has always been my belief that the essence of our democracy is the participation of citizens all across the country. I think it was Justice Brandeis who once said that the most important office in a democracy is the office of citizen. And I think Move On provides a structure and the capacity for people to get engaged and involved in the issues that impact each and every one of us every day. And so I'm just proud to be affiliated with what you guys do, and keep it up, keep it up. You know, the topic's energy today, and you know, the summer's over, and gas prices have started to come down a little bit. And so there's a temptation, which we often fall prey to put any discussion of energy on the back burner until the next crisis. Gone are the days when the president would make sweeping pronouncements in his State of the Union address about America's addiction to oil. Today, he seems to be getting far more political mileage out of questioning Democrats' commitment to fighting terror than by affirming America's commitment to energy independence. But as the president may or may not have learned, simply ignoring a problem doesn't make it go away. Because while headlines about price gouging and gas lines have temporarily faded from the news, new headlines have emerged that should have us every bit as concerned about this addiction that we can't seem to shake off. Yeah, in the last week, two news items in particular caught my eye. The first is from the Detroit Free Press, and it talks about how Ford Motor Company plans to cut 30,000 hourly jobs, 14,000 salaried jobs, and close 16 plants by 2012. Ford Motor Company CEO conceded that it is unlikely that Ford will turn a profit anytime in the next 5 years. Now, there are plenty of reasons for Ford's financial troubles, but one of the most glaring has been their inability to compete with foreign counterparts by transitioning to fuel-efficient and hybrid vehicles that represent the future of the auto industry. 200,000 of these hybrids are driving around China today, a country, by the way, that already has higher fuel economy standards than the United States. Over in Japan, Toyota is doubling production of its popular Prius model to sell 100,000 in the United States this year. At Ford, there are plans to make only 20,000 Escape hybrids in 2006, and GM's brand won't be on the market until next year. Meanwhile, the waiting list for a hybrid car in this country gets longer by the day. Now, these foreign auto companies are out-innovating and out-competing us. And if we do nothing to help U.S. car makers, tens of thousands more jobs and billions in business will be heading overseas in the months to come. And for those of us who are in the Midwest, where manufacturing is often the foundation for an economy for entire regions, this is serious business. Unfortunately, job losses and foreign competition are just the half of it. Because the second headline that caught my eye was in Saturday's New York Times, and it read, quote, "Suicide attacks foiled at two oil sites in Yemen." This news is disturbing, but not surprising. For years, Al-Qaeda has been trying to attack Middle Eastern oil refineries as a way to wreak havoc on the U.S. economy. Osama bin Laden himself has said, and I'm quoting Mr. Bin Laden here. Focus your operations on oil, especially in Iraq and the Gulf area, since this will cause them to die off on their own. Unquote. In the past, even minor attacks have caused global prices to jump $2 per barrel in a single day. And former CIA agent tells us that if terrorists ever succeeded in destroying an entire oil complex, it could take enough oil off the market to cause financial catastrophe here in the United States. So more than anything else, headlines like these represent a realization that goes far beyond the temporary rise and fall in gas prices. It's a realization that for all our economic dominance, for all our military might, the Achilles heel of the most powerful nation on earth is the oil that we cannot live without. The president should know this, that thousands of auto workers are losing their jobs, that we spend $18 million on foreign oil every hour, that our climate is changing and global temperatures are rising because of our exorbitant use of fossil fuels and our unwillingness to make a commitment to transition to new approaches. And yet, for somebody who talks tough about defending America, actually solving our energy crisis seems to be pretty low on the president's agenda. As I said the other day, after the State of the Union address, where the president acknowledged that we are addicted to oil, it's not enough just to acknowledge the addiction. You know, there's still another 11 steps in the 12-step program. And that's... As much as George Bush might want to defend America, and I've said before, I don't doubt his commitment to do so, he also needs to defend his vision of government. And that's a government that can't, won't, or shouldn't solve great national challenges like our energy dependence. He doesn't believe that government has a role, which is why the president's funding for renewable fuels is at the same level it was the day he took office. That's why his budget funds less than half of the energy bill that he himself signed into law. Some of you may remember it was a little embarrassing during the campaign when he announced this issue of energy independence, actually after the State of the Union address, and he wanted to visit a facility that was supposed to be doing energy research, and it turned out that they had just laid off most of the energy researchers and scientists there, and they had to suddenly hire them all back for the president's appearance. That's why billions of tax dollars that could have been used to fund energy research went to the record-profiting oil companies instead. And that's why it's time to stand up for a new vision of government this November. You see, it's this timidity, this smallness in our politics that I think is holding us back right now. The idea that some problems are just too big to handle, and that if you just ignore them, sooner or later, they will go away. But one of the things I want to emphasize today is that that's not where the American people are. That's not who we are as a nation. You know, we still believe in an America where anything is possible. We just aren't sure that our leaders still do. We still believe in dreaming big dreams. We just suspect that our leadership has forgotten how. There's a reason, as Eli mentioned, that some have compared the quest for energy independence to the Manhattan Project or the Apollo moon landing. Like these historic efforts, moving away from an oil economy is a major challenge that is going to require sustained national commitment and may require some sacrifice from each of us. During World War II, we had an entire country working around the clock to produce enough planes and tanks to beat the Axis powers. In the middle of the Cold War, we built a national highway system, so we had a quick way to transport military equipment across the country. When we wanted to beat the Russians into space, we poured millions into a national education initiative that graduated thousands of new scientists and engineers. If we hope to strengthen our security and create hundreds of thousands of new jobs, we can offer no less of a commitment when it comes to energy independence. With technology we have on the shelves right now and fuels that we can grow right here on our soil, by 2025, we could reduce our oil imports by over 7.5 million barrels per day, an amount greater than all the oil we are expected to import from the entire Middle East, and a lot more than we could ever hope to pump out of Anwar in Alaska. We start by producing cars that use less oil. The auto industry has not been asked to raise fuel economy standards in 17 years. And lately, we've just stopped asking them to. Today, we don't have a choice. Starting in 2008, if we raise CAFE standards, those are fuel efficiency standards on cars, if we raise them a modest 3% a year over the next 12 years, by 2020, passenger vehicles would be averaging 40.5 miles per gallon, and light trucks would average 32.6 miles per gallon. Now, this is not a crazy pie-in-the-sky increase. 5 years ago, the National Academy of Sciences concluded that raising CAFE standards to 33 miles per gallon for passenger cars could easily be done with existing technology without compromising passenger safety. Not only would this reduce America's oil consumption, but it would increase profits for the auto industry. Yesterday, a University of Michigan report came out and said that if the big three automakers took proactive steps to increase the fuel efficiency of their vehicles, they would stand to gain up to $2 billion more per year in profits. But if they continue on their current path, they stand to lose $3.6 billion a year in profits. Now, of course, auto executives are right when they say that transitioning to a more fuel-efficient automobile is going to be costly at a time of sagging profits and stiff competition. And that's precisely why the federal government shouldn't let industry face these costs all on their own. I propose, for example, that we could strike a bargain with the big three automakers, where the government picks up part of the tab for their retiree health care costs. There's a huge cost that automakers in the U.S. have to pay for retired workers. Typically, more cost goes to health care per automobile in Detroit than the amount spent on steel on each car. And that gives you a sense of how big of a drag that is on U.S. automakers. So if we picked up the tab for retiree health care costs, a tab that ran almost $6.7 billion just last year, we could help these car companies transition, but we'd only do so in exchange for the car companies using that savings to invest in more fuel-efficient cars. Beyond raising CAFE, however, it's time that we think about how we can shift from oil altogether as America's fuel for choice. We can't do it right away, but we can begin now, the way countries like Brazil have begun to do. This doesn't just mean singing the praises of ethanol and hoping that it finds its way into our fuel supply on its own. It means taking major steps right now to put a national biofuel infrastructure in place. Already, some cars on the road have flexible fuel tanks necessary for them to run on E85, which is a cheaper, cleaner blend of 85% ethanol, 15% gasoline. But millions upon millions of cars still don't have these tanks. It's time for them to install those tanks in every single car that they make. And it's time for the government to cover this small cost. It only costs $100 per car to make every automobile flexible fuel efficient. Brazil, right now, 70% of the new cars in Brazil are flexible fuel vehicles. We should also make sure that from now on, every single automobile that the government purchases is a flex fuel vehicle so that we can help create a market for these types of cars. It's also time for us to actually have E85 fueling stations made available to the public. Currently, only 681 out of 170,000 fueling stations in America offer E85 pumps. Now, this just isn't acceptable. Every American should have a choice to fill up their car with E85 at any fueling station. And oil companies should stop standing in the way and join us in making this happen. If the big oil companies would devote just 1% of their first quarter profits this year to install E85 pumps, more than 7,000 service stations around the country would be able to serve E85 to hungry motorists. Now, finally, we should reduce the risk of investing in renewable fuels by providing loan guarantees and venture capital to those entrepreneurs with the best plans to develop and sell biofuels. And we should create a market for renewable fuels by ramping up renewable fuel standards and creating an alternative diesel standard in this country that together would blend 65 billion gallons of renewable fuels into the petroleum supply each year. You know, in the days and months after September 11th, Americans were waiting to be called to something bigger than themselves. Just like their parents and grandparents of the greatest generation, many of you out there were willing to serve and defend your country, not only in the fields of war, but on the home front. All that was asked of you at the time was that you shot. But we can do better than that. We have higher aspirations than that for our country. We have higher aspirations for the next generation. This battle around energy independence is our chance to step up and serve. For decades, we've heard president after president call for energy independence in this country, but for decades, we have fallen short because citizens have not demanded that we make the change. It's time that all of us make that call ourselves. We shouldn't wait for the next time gas hits $3 a gallon. We shouldn't accept any more headlines that talk about a dying auto industry or a terrorist plot to use oil as a weapon against America. We should act, and we should act right now. Now's the time for serious leadership to get us started down the path of energy independence. Now's the time for our call to arms. I hope some of the ideas I've laid out today can serve as the basis for this call, but I also hope that members of both parties and all levels of government can come together in the near future to launch this serious quest for energy independence. There is no more issue. There's no issue that is more important than this one. And the best thing about it is if we do something about it, we get a trifecta. We do something about our economy, we do something about our national security, and maybe, just maybe, we can save the planet so that our children and our grandchildren can enjoy it the way they should. Thank you very much, everybody. I appreciate it. Thank you.